listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location. This week, we're at One Shot Studios in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye, the movie guy. And this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we fall in love with sparkling vampires. We go to wizardly school. We play some Hunger Games as we cover our top five favorite young adult adaptations.
At least two out of the three. I'll give you two out of the three.
I don't think Twilight will be mentioned on anybody's list.
Yeah, I sure hope not.
We are doing this in honor of Divergent, which opens up this weekend wide. It's the latest craze in the young adult.
Does it not sound like a film that Liam Neeson should be in? Any one word title film right now, I just think of Liam Neeson like... It's Divergent. She's Divergent.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
We have a review.
Liam Neeson, we're going to get to Liam Neeson.
No, we're going to get to Divergent. We have a review. Thanks to Hollywood Chicago, I got out to a screening over there at the IMAX, actually, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
At Navy Pier, right where a lot of the scenes were filmed for Divergent.
Sure.
So we have a review of that. We also have a review of the Grand Budapest Hotel, Wes Anderson's latest.
Yeah.
Plus, you got out and caught.
Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Nice family film, Matthew.
Yeah, right up there with Grand Budapest Hotel. Actually, it was a really good film.
Awesome. Can't wait to hear that. We also go eye for an eye on the new film by Darren Aronofsky, Noah, starring Russell Crowe.
Sweet.
Plus, in honor of being at One Shot Studios, I guess is what they call it. We have on for the third time in joining us just very shortly, James D'Amato of One Shot.
He's the Andy Richter to our Conan O'Brien. So we're very pleased to have him back. And huge thank you to him for hosting us here at his studio.
Can't wait to talk to James again. And in honor of Divergent, looking at some of the actually supporting actresses in there, Kate Winslet is in Divergent. Also, Ashley Judd. You guys, James versus Matt, in Ashley Judd, Kate Winslet movie trivia.
Can we get the standings on the James and
I don't
Matt,
know. We're going to have to look
okay.
that up.
We'll look it up
in the break. And I also wanted to bring up the point that Darren Aronofsky directing Noah big budget films. I really like this idea, and I want to make a point to the Jawheads that he should continue doing like big budget action films.
What? No, he should stay in the indies, man. That's you know, his bread and butter.
Come on.
No.
Cinema War. Oh, that's going to be a good one right there, Matt.
Going down.
So without further ado, we bring in our guest, James D'Amato. He hosts One Shot RPG podcast. He is going to be at C2E2 right alongside us in Podcaster Row.
Can't wait for that.
And he recently was interviewed here in Chicago on the radio and
WBEZ.
WBEZ,
man.
How cool is that? James, welcome back to Cinema Jaw.
Hey, thank you so much for having me back. I love Cinema Jaw. It's great to be back. Hey, Jawheads, how's it going?
Now, you made a splash the last couple of times you were on. People really liked the argument you got into with Matt when it came down to Clark Kent and Superman.
Hey, if there's any time where Matt is wrong, I will be happy to correct him.
That's, you know, come on. This is a matter of opinion, James. I was right.
Well, opinion, but not opinion because you're factually wrong about that movie. So, you know, I don't want to embarrass you. This is your show. This should be a joyful occasion.
You're supposed to like Superman.
I do like Superman. That's why I hate that movie.
All right.
Now, James, tell us about this radio interview. Were they fans of your podcast?
Not fans so much. We had Trisha Bobita, from the WBEZ Nerdette podcast. She's a producer over at WBEZ, and one of her passion projects is a show called Nerdette, where they discuss, you know, women in nerdery. And it's not just, geeky stuff like role playing games or comics, but, it's STEM fields, science, math, engineering, that sort of thing. Anything that you can be nerdy about, this show has a segment on it. They once did a segment on professional Scrabble championships.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nerdy.
That's pretty nerdy. but we went on the show to discuss, the One Shot program and role playing games, sort of explain that to people. And the new role-playing system that I'm developing with my one-shot collaborator, Kat Murphy, called Epiphany. And it is based on Groundhog Day.
Oh, nice.
Dude, when can I play this? Tell me more about this.
We are officially starting the alpha testing actually after that, like this Friday. We're having our first alpha tests. And soon, hopefully, we're going to be rolling out our public play tests of the system. But unlike most role-playing systems, it has three game masters, three people who sort of control the universe, and one player. And it's modeled after Groundhog Day and movies like Scrooged and...
All Bill Murray movies
Bill Murray is a huge a huge character for this because in most of his movies, he's kind of a bastard, and there are sort of magical realist circumstances that change his life around. Another great example of this would be Big or Freaky Friday. Anything where something bizarre happens to somebody to change their perspective or reform their life, that's what this role-playing system reproduces.
Sounds pretty cool.
That's awesome. So three game masters and just one player?
And one player. And they all the game masters fight and argue with each other over the player and how they get to control his destiny.
Wow, that's really cool.
Where do you come up with these ideas?
They're all in my head, and they're trying to get out.
Gotta love when James comes on the jaw.
Absolutely.
But I'm excited. I'm excited to talk some movies.
Yes. Did you find that the young adult adaptations was a good list to come up with?
Well, as a nerd, I gotta say, like, these movie lists have been a great thing for me, man. This was so much harder than I originally thought it would be. These are all movies that are so important to me. And I feel like young adult fiction is something that nerds really gravitate towards.
Yes.
For sure.
And I would actually say they have a bad rap overall when people mention, oh, it's a young adult adaptation. They're thinking in their head, Twilight, Hunger Games, Harry Potter, which is a good series. But you know what I mean? It has that feeling of, oh, you know what kind of movie this is going to be. But when you do your research.
I think that's Twilight's fault.
Yeah.
And it's really Twilight's fault.
And you dig a little bit deeper. There's some great adaptations that I hope to uncover for the Jawheads.
Good. I hope so, too, because my list is very run-of-the-mill.
I love that Matt comes out and is completely honest about it. That's great. So I know we've talked about One Shot before on Cinema Jaw, but again, for the Jawheads that may be listening for the first time, tell them a little bit about One Shot and where to catch you online.
So One Shot is a podcast where we do actual plays of role-playing games. That's where we take a role-playing game like Dungeons & Dragons, and we sit down and record a play session together. Now, if that doesn't sound interesting to you, it's really just collaborative storytelling. We take a lot of artists, like comedians, actors, writers, and we bring them together, and they just spontaneously tell a story in the moment. We use the rules from role-playing systems because they organize those stories. And we produce some pretty interesting pieces. For C2E2, for instance, we're going to have an episode with the War Rocket Ajax contributor Matt Wilson that takes the role-playing system Fiasco, which we've mentioned on the show before. It reproduces Coen Brothers movies. And we're going to do that with the X-Men.
Nice.
So,
right up your alley, man.
Yeah.
You're
going to
see
fun, man.
You're going to hear an X-Men movie as though it were directed by the Coen Brothers. And later on, we're going to take a system called Everyone is John, where everybody at the table is playing one character, and we're changing it a little bit. It's Everyone is Joker, and we're going to have everybody being different Joker personalities causing mayhem in Gotham.
Oh,
so,
this is going to be good stuff.
Hey, I got a suggestion for you after the Joker one.
What's that?
Everyone is John McClane.
Oh, man, that would be f***ing incredible.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
That would be, I would love to see how that one goes down.
Well, we're definitely going to have to hang out with James after parties at C2E2. We always are good for a couple of drinks at the Hyatt bar there.
Oh, yeah.
And so we'll
have
to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Be there.
We'll definitely be partying at C2E2. Jawheads, again, we're obviously running ads in the middle. Hope to see you guys out at C2E2. So.
Yeah, it's getting close, so mark your calendar right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is a jam-packed jaw, as always, Matt. I'm glad that James is sitting in on this entire jaw. And thanks again for helping us out tonight, James.
Hey, no problem. I love this show.
Elias, for the Jawheads listening to this and are concerned, is not with us today. He had a emergency problem. We don't want to go too much into it.
He had a toothectomy.
Yeah, there we go.
This is what happens when you try to escape the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't escape the box.
Have you ever seen Old Boy, James?
No, but I have seen Marathon Man.
Well, I This is pretty much right in between. I get the claw of a hammer. Put
Am
it
I
in
safe?
His mouth.
Am I safe? All right. Matt, it brings us to a segment called Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore. Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
Redbox Instant.
Unbelievable service here, Matt. You got unlimited streaming at home. And the big complaint with Netflix is they don't get enough new releases. Redbox Instant allows you to get 4 free rentals from their kiosks every single month.
Yeah, and these things are everywhere. You can't throw a stone without hitting a Redbox. And they're at every single convenience store in the world.
And the best part of this thing is, Jawheads, you can try out their service free for 1 month. If you go to our website, cinemajaw.com, you will see an ad for Redbox Instant. Click on it, try it free for a month, and you help out Cinemajaw.
We thank them for their support.
Eye for an Eye this week, Noah, a man suffering visions of an apocalyptic deluge, takes measures to protect his family from the coming flood. Inspired by the epic biblical story, the film stars Russell Crowe, Jennifer Connelly, Anthony Hopkins, and Emma Watson. It is directed by Darren Aronofsky, who has given us such brilliant films as Black Swan, The Wrestler, and Requiem for a Dream. Matt, interested or ignore on Noah?
I'm interested in Noah. I mean, you know, I'm not going out to catch every biblical adaptation that they make, but this one seems pretty special, and I'm there. Yeah.
James, interested or ignore on Noah?
I will admit, I was originally not interested in Noah until I found out Darren Aronofsky was directing it. That's the weirdest thing in the world to me. I know the Bible is like public property and you don't need to license the story of Noah's Ark, but I still can't believe he's getting away with that.
Well, I gotta say, first and foremost, it is a head scratcher that Darren Aronofsky is making Noah. To me, it's just the two things don't line up. I don't know what was going on here. I guess I'm slightly interested just because I'm intrigued by the idea.
Exactly.
But I really don't want to see a movie about Noah, but with Aronofsky behind it,
you know,
I'm slightly interested.
Yeah. With that cast, I mean, you know.
I'm disappointed it's not starring Bill Cosby, obviously. but it should be good anyway.
Yeah, the action sequences, I mean, you know, when it really starts to, you know, drizzle and, you know, the big flood's coming. Oh boy, there's a fear, I'm sure, you know.
A lot of drizzling in this movie.
Yes, you got to get the animals on board quick and you got to make sure you got a male and a female of each species.
See, that's a weird thing. When you apply a story of a man trying to save his family to the Noah's Ark tale, it doesn't make any sense.
Oh, it doesn't make any sense at all.
No, we got to save these lions. You don't understand. You're putting us all at risk, Noah. Please put the lions away.
And I got to ask you too. If you guys have seen Life of Pi, he had only about 5 animals on the boat, and it was an absolute catastrophe. So how the hell did Noah pull this off?
Well,
this is a slightly larger boat.
Oh,
have you seen the boat in the previews?
So many cubits.
It's like a submarine. If you see there's a trailer out. It looks pretty cool. I gotta say, from what I've seen so far, the footage I've seen, I'm willing to see this one. It looks like it's pretty interesting.
Wow. I don't know. I'm fingers crossed. I'm hoping for the best because I just got done rewatching Black Swan, and I gave it my movie of the year that it mm-hmm. came out. And I'm always sometimes nervous to go back after, you know, being a reviewer and seeing these movies and standing behind a film. And then, you know, 3 years pass and I finally go back and watch it. It held up. I loved it.
It's exceptional.
I mean, my God. It's a masterpiece of a film.
Sure.
It builds to such a climactic ending like so few films do. Just loved it. And all the reflections and the black and white. And I loved it, man. So he's a master filmmaker.
What is this
doing on the Ark, I don't know.
I don't know.
I have zero expectations for this. You know, if this is a paycheck, I will be disappointed because his paycheck was supposed to be the Wolverine.
That's right.
And that never materialized. Hollywood.
Ooh.
Or Darren Aronofsky.
We're going to talk about this later.
I know. Yeah. We are. All right. So we got 3 interesteds, sort of mixed interesteds for the wrong reasons, I guess. We're just intrigued on Noah. But Russell Crowe is starring in the film, and I wanted to go round robin here and describe Russell Crowe in 3 words or less. We're going to start with James. You got 3 words or less that describe Russell Crowe.
Yes. Fist with hair. That's what I believe Russell Crowe is.
Nice.
this is why you are our best recurring guest.
Oh, man. Great stuff. Matt, you got three words that describe Russell Crowe.
I was just going to say Hando, because if you're not familiar with his inaugural role as Hando, the leader of the skinheads in Romper Stomper, I think it's time you spin that one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
It's a rough watch.
Yeah.
It is.
I went with my three words were ugly warthead. He's got that damn wart on his nose, and it bothers me so much.
Oh, that's part of his
character.
Is it
a wart?
It's like Lemmy from Motorhead, man.
I think it's a wart. It's something right on his nose.
Warts go away after a while.
Morton Downey Jr.
It's my constant focus when I see Russell Crowe on screen. I constantly think, like, oh, what is with that thing? And right between his eyes bothers the hell out of me.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I like it.
Now, we threw this question out to the Jawheads on Twitter. Matt, we get any responses?
We did. G.A. Johnson, who is G.A. Johnson 52 on Twitter, said, greatest living actor.
What?
Wow. Hashtag Russell Crowe.
Come on.
Wow.
Come on.
Russell Crowe.
No. No way.
We know you listened to Cinema Jaw. We know you knew this episode was coming up.
I tell you what, I wouldn't even probably put him in my top 35.
Everybody go tweet at that account. That's Russell Crowe's alternate account.
Seriously. The Chicago Comedy Film Festival, who is at CC Film Fest on Twitter, said, AAA, average Aussie actor.
Look at that. We went from the greatest living actor of all time to average Aussie actor.
I don't know. When you think of the, you know, think of all the Australian actors, they're all pretty good.
They are.
So average Aussie is like at least above average regularly.
There's something in the water down there. I agree.
Yeah.
Actresses too.
Fucking scorpions and weird snakes and shit.
The actresses that pop out. Holy cow.
Yeah.
At WFO Dick said, I can't decide between probably huge donger and Australian grumpy face.
I'll tell you now, it's Australian grumpy face.
I love.
Wait, James. Face. How do you know? You said that with some. You definitely knew that answer. All right. At Healthy Life Kids said, brawny, intelligent, kind.
I'll give you one of the three.
Okay, that's Russell Crowe's wife.
I got brawny. I'll give him brawny. That's about
it. Baby, you got to write into this podcast right now. I'll give you three words.
I'm doing my own tweets, I am. Nope, that was not Australian, even remotely.
Mine was sort of like Brooklyn or something.
Yeah.
Nash SH said, best role, gladiator.
That would be accurate.
Pretty accurate. That and the Insider.
Yeah, I agree. Insider is great. Yeah. You know what? He's had some pretty good roles.
Yeah, I will say that.
He's not as horrible as we're making him out to be.
I don't think he's a bad actor. I just think he's good for certain parts.
Right.
And, you know, it's rare.
Which parts of those, James?
That would be his Australian donger.
I mean, for instance, he was perfect in L.A. Confidential as the, you know, sort of the rough cop the temper. I love that.
In Gladiator, he was basically the same thing, a rough cop.
Pretty much.
That's basically like the same role.
In Roman times. Yeah.
And they don't make good movies for that character very often. So.
Let's see here. Gypsy Soulmate, who is at Four Bearers, and that's the number four, followed by Bearers. Her three words is hot, hot, hot.
Whoa,
smiley face.
Wow. I don't see him as a sex symbol at all. James?
Well, you're distracted by the giant wart on his face.
I I'm assuming that Gypsy Soulmate is a female. It could easily be his three words. I should say their three words. Just in all fairness. Poetry Jones, who is at Poetry Jones 1975, said, fighting round the world. She made round the world.
I almost did that. I almost made that same reference. A great critique of his career was that South Park episode where he beat up cancer. a person with cancer.
I'm not a South Park fan. I don't watch it that much, but yeah, I've heard of it. Heard of that episode, I mean.
You've heard of South Park, right?
I've heard of that episode.
Well, I'm familiar with them.
Let's see. High Fives Podcast said, Javert can't sing.
Yeah, that is
Javert.
Javert from Les Mis. And obviously he was the weakest link.
He was
link
absolutely the weakest link in there.
He comes on and he sings and it almost takes you out of the movie because you're like, what the hell is Russell Crowe trying to sing in this movie for?
I would like to see him and Pierce Brosnan, who was in Mamma Mia, get together and do a musical buddy movie.
That would
they're
be
both
awesome.
Terrible singers.
That would be great.
Yeah.
It could be directed by the Farley brothers.
Or Darren Aronofsky.
Now, that I would watch in a second.
Awesome. Awesome. Jawheads, if we missed your three words that describe Russell Crowe and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet at CinemaJaw. We will retweet it and get the discussion going. Speaking of new movies, Matt, I got out and caught Divergent.
You nervous?
Who are you? For your test?
No. I was terrified. The only way our society can survive is for each of you to claim your rightful place. Today, you will take a test that will help you discover who you truly are. The future belongs to those who know where they belong. You ready? Your results were inconclusive.
This was supposed to tell me what to do. We're supposed to trust the test.
The test didn't work on you. They call it Divergent.
You can't let them. Shailene Woodley stars as Trish in the latest young adult adaptation to hit theaters. The story is set in a futuristic Chicago, a future that has seen massive war. The cityscape, while still standing, is bruised and battered. To make sure another war of this magnitude does not happen, the city has been divided into five fractions. At age 16, you take an aptitude test, which guides you into what group you will live with the rest of your life. However, when 16-year-old Trish takes the test, she does not fit into one of the five categories. They have a word for this, Matt. It's called divergent.
What? God.
She does, however, choose the brave fraction known as Dauntless. Here she has to hide the fact that she is divergent because that poses a threat to the formulaic society they live in. From there, you have the basic training sequences and the love interest comes into the spotlight. Triss's instructor, who goes by the name of Four, he is hard on her. But it's clear, Matt, that he has feelings for her almost immediately.
Wait.
He's going to give her a hard four?
He's hard on her?
Eventually, a plot is revealed in this movie. Kate Winslet, in a fun, villainous role, she is going to use a serum on the soldiers of Dauntless so she can control their actions. However, the serum does not work on Divergence.
My God.
What? There is plenty, Matt, to roll your eyes at here. Some of the dialogue is as wooden as a George Lucas script. A scene, for instance, where Four shows his tattoo to Triss, explaining what it means, is extremely painful to watch. The weak explanation of the fractions and how the city still functions as a whole is another glaring weakness of the film. But, Matt, on the positive side, it is filmed in Chicago, a dystopian Chicago at that. The look of the city was interesting. One highlight has to be when Triss and her friends go ziplining off the John Hancock building through the entire city. Navy Pier and the Ferris wheel also play integral parts in the film. As much as I did not care for most of the training sequences, I did like when they use these fear tests. They get inside your head and see how you cope with your scariest fears. That thought on film was really well done and well captured. I know one fraction of people that are going to love this film, teenage girls. For the rest of us, well, it's a hell of a lot better than Twilight. Ride the movie guy's grade, 2.5 Jaws at best. That's Divergent, guys.
Well, it sounds like Hunger Games, the next Hunger Games is going to be really fun. And we should all watch that.
You know what's funny is that you mentioned
that. Like a pile of crap.
It sounds like literally they're divided. The city is divided into different parts and it's Chicago instead of Denver. It's still a Midwestern area.
What people are probably going to have a problem with the most is how much it takes on from all the young adult novels that we've been seeing. I mean, there's a little something of everything. The love interest sort of Twilight, the futuristic fractions of Hunger Games, and they got to fight to survive. And there's so much that it sort of borrows from other series. But at the same point, it's a lot more violent than the Hunger Games. And the Hunger Games
is supposed to be the movie or the book?
I haven't read Divergent, the book, but I'm saying comparing the two movies.
The two films.
Yeah, and Hunger Games is supposed to be pretty violent.
Right,
so.
And this actually, I mean, people die in this film. There's some mass casualties going on, and it's a dark film at the core. It takes a long time to set up. The runtime is about 2 hours and 25 minutes.
Jesus.
Which is too long for one of these types of movies, but again, I didn't hate it. It has its moments, and again, I saw it in a very, crowded IMAX pre-screening, loud round of applause
people
when this film
wanted
ended.
To like this. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, for me, it's a two jaw movie. If you have a reason to go see it, or you're into these kind of movies,
yeah, if you read those books, good for you. You got a movie.
You'll probably like it. Or if you got to take your niece or somebody to go see it, it's not like the worst film. You can sit there.
It's not Twilight. Right. Parents and older people in the life of young girls. It's not Twilight.
There you go.
Yeah, we can rejoice in that alone.
2.5 Jaws for Divergent. The other new movie opening up wide, opened up here last weekend, is The Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah.
Matt, even if you were blind and deaf, you would still know this is a Wes Anderson film 5 minutes in. The Grand Budapest Hotel is filled with detailed settings.
Sure how that's possible.
Populated with unique characters and supplies a solid little caper story as well.
You can smell Adrian Brody.
Ralph Fiennes plays Gustav, the concierge at the Grand Budapest, which is located in a fictional European country before the start of the Second World War. He gets close to and sleeps with some of the hotel's older guests, hoping to one day be part of their will. When Madame D, played by Tilda Swinton in some great aging makeup, dies, this in fact happens. She leaves him a very famous painting thought to be worth millions. However, her family, mainly her two sons, played by Adrian Brody and Willem Dafoe, want to make sure he does not get anything. One part hotel comedy, one part prison break, all parts Wes Anderson. He excels, Matt, with detailing his sets to the point that it makes the setting look like a storybook. Everything in the hotel, from the ashtrays to the elevator, help breathe some whimsical magic into the film. Add in some great actors sporting some funny mustaches, and you can't help but smile while you're watching this movie. The large cast of Anderson regulars, such as Bill Murray, Owen Wilson, and Jason Schwartzman, all play minor roles. The film truly belongs to Ralph Fiennes and Tony Revolori, who plays Gustav's stoned-faced lobby boy. They make a great team and give us a reason to care about the story. As with all Anderson films, I think this one will get better upon repeat viewings. As I already really love this film, I just think I'll even appreciate it more. Rye the Movie Guy's grade, 3.75 Jaws, one of the year's best films.
I am so excited to see that movie. Wes Anderson, man.
Rye just had an orgasm in his pants in the theater.
James, you got a cigarette?
Yeah.
So,
don't worry.
So which Bible story is Wes Anderson going to direct next year?
Wouldn't that be spectacular?
I think he would do a fantastic Lot. I would love to see Bill Murray play Lot.
There you go.
That's a question we'll have to throw out on Twitter. What biblical story would you want to see Wes Anderson direct?
Jason Schwartzman and and let's see, who Owen Wilson are the angels.
I love it.
And Tilda Swinton turns into a pillar of salt. You can't miss it.
Bingo.
But really, the Grand Budapest Hotel, I always mention about how he always has like a key location, if it's a ship or a train, where mm-hmm. he gets in such detail. And here the whole reason for the movie is this Grand Budapest Hotel, and it actually takes place in three different time periods. You have them looking back at the story of the hotel and how it got passed along and what happened to Gustav. And so, the story, the hotel is a little bit run down when Jason Schwartzman is working there. And the story goes on to look back when it was this grand palace. And actually, when they go back, one of the funny things they do is they actually go back in time to the like 1930s, the aspect ratio of the film actually changes to the square. And there's some good sight gags in there too, where they're like knocking on a door and it's off screen because you can't see it because of the aspect ratio. The guy thinks of everything. Whole time I just watched this movie with a big smile on my face. And, it does have actually quite a bit swearing and for a Wes Anderson film, a couple of really heavy F-bombs that really make the F-bomb dirty again. You know, it makes it like shocking. Like, oh my God, the way Adrian Brody drops a couple is, I mean, it's laugh out loud funny though.
Oh, that's great.
Definitely Jawheads. Get out there and check out the Grand Budapest Hotel. 3¾ Jaws. Matt, you also caught a whimsical film.
It has no comparison to the Grand Budapest Hotel, but I saw Mr. Peabody and Sherman. And contrary to popular belief and my belief going into this film, a 5-minute segment from the Rocky and Bullwinkle show can hold an entire movie. It was only a little over 90 minutes, I think. But this is it's a great family film, and I really highly enjoyed it. I recommend go see it.
How many Jaws?
I think I gave it 3.25.
Wow.
What?
My God.
Wow.
Wow. Should have remembered that cue.
We got to get better with that one.
See, we got reviews.
We did it wrong every time we recorded it.
This is the great thing about CinemaJaw. We got reviews of Divergent, The Grand Budapest Hotel. We got family films here, Matt. And it brings us to our segment, Young Adult Novels.
Ooh, I'm excited.
Matt, you're getting us started this week with number 5. Your number 5 favorite young adult adaptation.
All right. And I did preface this by saying that my list is very pedestrian. So at number 5, I have, and I'm just going with the entire series, The Chronicles of Narnia. Big fan of the C.S. Lewis books. I was very, very excited when I heard that they were going to be remade for the silver screen in a grandiose fashion. Adaptations have been attempted in the past, and they've sucked. So when the first one came out, I was pretty damn pleased. I think The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is a great movie.
Absolutely.
And the second one, Prince Caspian.
Oh, did that even come out?
It did.
I don't think it did.
Yeah, there's 3 of them.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, me neither.
and James had me totally goofed. I'm like, yeah, it did come out. Oh, right.
No, I'm pretty sure it didn't.
No, the second one I wouldn't say was terrible.
No, it wasn't. It was really the third one that started.
The third one
suck.
Was really bad. That was diarrhea of the screen.
Yeah, and you know what? It's funny because that's kind of how the books go. They become unreadable at one point, and then you have to read the last one just to tie it all together. But that first book, that first movie, it was fantastic, and I think it's worth it for everybody to watch.
It gets us off to the right start. I love the first film also. Good pick. We throw it over to James. What do you got sitting at number 5?
All right, my number 5, I think you're going to like this one. The Fantastic Mr. Fox. How can you not love Wes Anderson? And the sooner you can introduce your kids to Wes Anderson, the better.
Right.
And there's no better way to do that than seeing Bill Murray be a badger.
Oh,
come on, man.
And that's a Roald Dahl book, right?
It is a Roald Dahl book. Yeah, I limited myself to one Roald Dahl because obviously he's going to dominate this category. He's really great at getting his books adapted. And this is just a great, fun movie, and it's also beautiful.
It's gorgeous. I mean, the animation, the stop motion is fantastic. And I didn't think Wes Anderson had it in him to pull off that kind of great Wes Anderson film inside an animated film, but he did it.
You know, I feel like as soon as you see Life Aquatic, you like, there's that potential there. Mm-hmm. And he just, like, showed it to us with Fantastic Mr. Fox.
And while we're on that note, he uses some stop motion in Grand Budapest Hotel in a awesome action sequence at the end that probably has no reason to fit in the film. But in a Wes Anderson movie, it works. He has this magic on screen. They go from live action to stop motion to live action, and you just buy every second of it. You just are having fun with it.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, good stuff. Nice pick at number 5. I love Fantastic Mr. Fox. At my number, and I want to note, too, before I get started on my list. A lot of times, because we do these lists so often, I really go out of my way to try to mention films that I haven't talked a lot about on the Jaw. So some of these might be a little bit weak, this number 5 in particular. I didn't love the film, but it was one that I've never talked about since I've seen the film. It came out in 2009, stars your favorite actor, Matt, Michael Cera. I'm speaking of Youth in Revolt. And this was at...
Never heard of it.
This was at the point where Michael Cera was just about to peak out, where people were going about to get sick of him. He plays a dual role, more or less. This is based on the book by C.D. Payne. Film came out in 2009, as I mentioned. And he's trying to impress a girl in the movie, basically. And he's his normal, nerdy Michael Cera self. But he also takes on an alter ego known as, I think it's like Francis Dillinger, a rebellious troublemaker. And all hell just sort of breaks loose. He ends up crashing his car into a restaurant, starting a fire. Just goofy stuff happens to this guy. And it's funny because it's Michael Cera. It works in you know. And at that point, he was reaching his peak of Michael Cera-ness. I think at this point, if I had saw the film, I'd almost be annoyed by him. But it worked when I saw Youth and Revolt. If you haven't seen it, Jawheads, worth a spin. Worth a spin. That's about it. What do you got sitting at number four, Matt?
Number four, The Princess Bride.
I could have seen this being a number one on
easily
your list.
A potential number one, right?
Wow, maybe we'll see that in the future, you guys.
Oh. That's called foreshadowing, yes. Right? You know what? I'm just going to drop it there.
All right.
Just drops mic, walks away.
Nice. Wow. Nice. James, what do you got sitting at number four?
Yeah, my number four is A Little Princess. For those who don't know, this is a movie starring a young Indian girl who's dropped off at an orphanage by her, not really orphanage, it's a school for girls, by her incredibly wealthy father. She has a passion for storytelling, and she is very, very clever, and that, of course, earns her the ire of the headmistress of the school for girls, and she really suffers through this woman imposing her hatred upon her. But it's a delightful, magical film. There are some beautiful storytelling sequences. Most of the film is like very gray and muted. And then this girl starts telling her stories about fantastical worlds and a beautiful love story. And all of a sudden the film is full of color and magic. It's just a great movie.
Wow. Sold me on it. I have not seen it. I don't even know if I've heard of it. I'm putting it on my queue.
Yeah, it's great. Like, there are not many places in movies for persons of color, so it's a great thing to show your kids to teach them that there are other people in the world.
Nice pick.
Is it? I'm assuming this is a foreign film. Yeah.
No.
It's an American film.
It's an American film. Somebody gave them the money, and it was worth it.
And what's it called?
A Little Princess.
It's good, man. I like that.
Nice. I'm putting it on my queue. Sitting at number four, I have a film I've talked about a couple of times on CinemaJaw, but I got to get the word out because I still think people don't believe me how good of a film this is. Came out in 2007. The film is called Stardust. And it's based on the book by your buddy, Matt, Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Claire Danes plays a fallen star in the magical kingdom, Stormhold. Mm-hmm. And she actually comes down to Earth, and she's wanted by everybody. The king's sons want her to marry her. There's three bad witches out there that want to eat her for power. And there's a guy who we find out was born in Stormhold, but is living outside of the wall that also gets in on this adventure. Robert De Niro is in here. Claire Danes. It's got a huge cast. Have you seen this film?
It's a lot of fun.
And it works on a fantasy level. It's a fun fantasy film that I don't think they make enough of these days where it really works. And again, for young adults, it's probably a good read. I've not read the book.
The book's a little bit better than the movie.
Really?
But, you know.
You had me at Neil Gaiman, really.
Yeah. Well, I just read Neil Gaiman's book, The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which is his new book. And I was actually disappointed with it. So maybe I'll go back and read Stardust.
He's written so many that you got to have some stinkers in there.
Yeah. But definitely, Jawheads, check this one out. Again, came out in 2007. It's called Stardust. I've talked about it, you know, twice, three times before. I love this one.
Huh.
So that was my number four. We're into our threes.
All right. At number three, I have The Lord of the Flies. This is, I think, required reading, or at least it was when I was in high school.
It's definitely was required reading when I was in high school.
Yeah. So, I'm such a huge fan. Maybe it was because I took the time in high school to really think about this book. And then we saw the film, so it made quite an impression on me. And the things that have happened in my life since then, the big news items like, like horrible things in the news, like school shootings and things, always bring me back.
That time you were, you know, stranded on that island with all those people and
that
you killed
too,
those people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. I try not to bring that up too much. It's a poignant book, and I think it was a very true book, almost had a sixth sense, like it saw something in the future that was coming. It's scary. how much of it is very accurate about the human psyche. I like it.
You think the movie holds up?
I think the movie was it's a fantastic adaptation. It's almost a short story. It's almost a novelette. It's an easy read. And, I shouldn't say an easy read, but it's a quick read. So yeah, I thought it was a great adaptation. There wasn't too much they had to leave out because it was so short. So yeah, the movie's great. And I guess I haven't seen it in about 10 years, but the last time I saw it, I thought it held up pretty well because, again, it doesn't rely on special effects or anything like that. So
nice.
Yeah, it's a timeless thing.
Nice pick.
Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Wasn't even thinking of Lord of the Flies when we were doing this list. I love when that happens. What do we got sitting at 3, James?
For me, another Neil Gaiman, Coraline.
Nice.
What a great way to introduce your kids to terrifying, horrible things.
It's a horror, really.
To horror. A funny thing about the writing for this book, the publisher originally did not think that kids would read a horror story. So the publisher said, okay, I'll do this. I'll read it to my kids and we'll test it out and see if it scares them. And
that's a great publisher right there. Someone who's really dedicated.
And they made it through the whole book. And, at the end of the book, she's like, sweetie, I'm so proud of you that you weren't scared at all. And she's like, oh no, I had nightmares every night. It's like, why did you tell me to keep reading it? She's like, well, then I wouldn't find out what happened. So it's like one of those magical books that like kids are capable of dealing with so much more than we give them credit for.
Sure.
And Coraline as a film is wonderful as well. The visual style is great. Stop motion animation is obviously like a heavy hitter on my list, but it's just great.
Yeah. And I a note on this too was that I saw this in 3D. This was right when 3D technology was
starting.
It was, a little bit before Avatar. That
reminds me about Sherman and Peabody. Go ahead and finish.
And it was right before Avatar, but it was like, it was sort of new. And I was like, oh, let's go see this movie, Coraline. And it was like just gorgeous to look at. That's what I remember the most, was just how much fun I had just looking at the film. I mean, the style was excellent.
Yeah, it's a beautiful movie. Very, very scary for kids. I encourage you to go out and give your kids some nightmares. They could use them.
It's a creepy movie. I like it. It's creepy
right up
for
your
adults.
Alley. Right up your alley. At number 3, I have a film that came out just last year, 2003. Stars, actually, Shailene Woodley from Divergent and also Miles Teller. I am speaking of The Spectacular Now. Have you guys had a chance to catch this movie yet?
I do not know this.
Boy, oh boy. I tell you what, it's a romantic teen film, but it's one that dives a little bit deeper than most. Miles Teller plays like the cool kid. His name in the movie is Sutter. His name is Sutter in the film, and he's like the cool kid. He's got it all figured out, but he's really hiding something. That's just something that he's sort of portraying to all his classmates, because deep down in, he's got demons that he's afraid people will see. And so he uses that to sort of deflect what's really deep down inside him. And he finally lets Shailene Woodley, who he's, tutoring and getting to know. And there's that love story, and it's a nice, teen love story. She really gets to know the real him. And then, bad things happen. And, it's just a little bit more, I think, realistic. And they portray the kids as a little bit more realistic in this film than they do most. Everybody's not just a character of being a jock or a nerd or whatever. Really thought I haven't read the book, but I really thought the movie captured more realism than most of these teen movies. Definitely, definitely check it out. It made a lot of people's top 10 lists last year, to give you an idea. So, The Spectacular Now, worth checking out. I loved it. That was my number 3.
Before I go to my number 2, I want to mention this note that I forgot, and I am remiss if I do not say that Mr. Peabody and Sherman had probably the best 3D I've seen in
Get out of here.
That's interesting.
Probably the best 3D I've seen in an animated film since the whole 3D craze began.
Wow.
It was way better than Wreck-It Ralph, which is probably my favorite 3D animated film ever. It was great. Awesome.
Nice.
See it in 3D if you get the chance. Okay.
What do you got sitting at 2?
At my number 2, The Lord of the Rings.
Ah, oh, jeez. That's not young adult. I don't think that counts as young adult.
Why is that not young adult?
If you would have said The Hobbit, possibly I'd give that to you. But Lord of the Rings is not young adult.
Okay, really? Wait. Here's,
no, it's
here's,
not.
Okay, here's the litmus test. And I want you guys to be honest. I'm asking you first, James. Mm-hmm. How old were you when you first read The Lord of the Rings?
It was required reading for me in sixth grade.
And how, well, so sixth grade, you were 10?
Yeah.
11?
Yeah, but okay. That's not,
I haven't read it.
10.
I haven't read it.
Okay. You're the only person, that's why I asked James first, okay? Everyone else on the planet's read it, and usually most people read it around the age of 12. Okay? Young adult reading, guys. It's fantasy.
But it wasn't written for a young adult audience. We just give it to young adults because it's fantasy, because people look down on fantasy.
That may be true, but we all pretty much come in contact with Lord of the Rings as a young adult.
That's true. That is a time. I don't know that makes it young adult fiction.
I'm on James's side here. I got to agree with him. And I also think that's partly because The Hobbit is the lead in to it. So The Hobbit is young adult, and then a lot of people think, hey, we'll just continue this on and give them Lord of the Rings.
Most young adult fiction looks down on kids. I'm not wrong.
You're wrong.
It's young adult fiction because everybody freaking reads it when they're young.
Plus, on top of that, it's a weak pick.
It's not a weak pick. Yeah, it's an awesome pick.
I mean, we talk about Lord of the Rings all the time. Jeez.
Hey, I said my list was pedestrian.
Right. That's true.
It's young adult fiction.
He did lower our expectations.
Yeah. Can't wait to hear his number one. James, what do you got sitting at number two?
My number two actually surprised me when I was researching this today. My number two, Babe.
Babe? Pig in the City?
No, the original. It was adapted from a novel, and I did not know that. And
I didn't know that either.
One of my all-time favorite movies. It's so good. It's one of those kids movies, and this is a thing about kids movies that you don't really see in adult movies, I guess, except for.
You could poo-poo me for Lord of the Rings, but you're giving him Babe with no poo-poo.
Babe is amazing.
It was Gene Siskel's film of the year that it came out.
Yeah. I don't know what problem you have with it. But it's one of those movies
of Pig in the City.
where you see a lot of stories happening at once on screen. Like, there is an overall tale, but there are definite, like, chapters and sections. And it's so interesting and wonderful to watch. And it's one of those just, like, warm stories that everybody except for Matt, who I will remind people, liked Man of Steel, can connect with.
Oh,
I didn't say I didn't like Babe.
That's a kick in your balls, Matt. That's a kick in your balls.
You said it deserved to be poo-pooed.
I'm saying, why do I deserve to get poo-pooed? Oh, fucking hell.
Oh, man. I love it. Nice pick at number two, James. I love it. Swings this over to my number two. And I have another recent film that came out. I have not read the book, but I hear good things. I know people who have read the book, if you will. A friend of mine did. And I would say this. Came out in 2012, the movie.
Babe, Pig in the City.
I'm speaking of The Perks of Being a Wallflower. This made my top 10 2 years ago. I loved the film. I've rewatched it since then and held up on a second time. I think it's a richer, more caring look at high school. And you got this Charlie who's a bit of an outsider, but I love that there's a reason why he's an outsider. There's this whole backstory on what happened to him and this tragedy, and it's a twist in the movie, and it's a sad twist. I like that, you know? Don't just have him be an outsider. You see this so many times in these high school movies where the guy's an outsider, but you don't really understand why. And this film is really about that. It's got a twist to it and a little, like I say, a sad twist, and you understand what happened to Charlie that made him not want to get along with everybody. And at the same time, it's got a great soundtrack. Emma Watson's fantastic in there, as is Throat in the Jawbox. I can't think of his name now. The kid who played Kevin in We Need to Talk About Kevin. Great, great actor. I love it, though. Perks of Being a Wallflower. Definitely check it out.
I've heard good things.
Oh, it's spectacular. That's my number two.
You know, I've been afraid to watch this movie because I think I'm not going to relate to it the same way I did to Breakfast Club. Basically, like, it's going to make me feel old.
It's different. It's different. It's not in that sense where it's,
you are old.
I know, but I don't want to see the movie about, hey, you're old.
No, you'll enjoy it. It's not the same as The Breakfast Club. It's not going for that. Matt, we are into our ones. You've already, dare I say, embarrassed yourself.
No, I didn't.
Number two pick.
No, I didn't.
So let's see what non-young adult.
Lord of the Rings is a fine number two on
Picky
young adult
has
fiction.
It number one. Matt, what is your number
because
one?
Because when I was a young adult, I had a van, and on the side of
down
my
by
van,
the river,
airbrushed on was Gandalf, and he was holding a book in his hand, Ryan. And you know what was on the cover of that book?
The dictionary.
No, Harry f***ing Potter.
Whoa!
That's my number one. It's the ultimate young adult fiction adaptation, probably of all time, certainly of our time.
Yeah, if only the movies were good.
The movies were good,
they
James.
They were not good.
Yes,
they were.
They
were not good.
Whoa.
They were fine, but they weren't good.
They weren't just fine. They were pretty darn good. They weren't fantastic. They're not Star Wars territory.
Of course they're not Star Wars territory. Let me break the tension here.
They're up there.
No, I wouldn't say they're up there.
Yes,
I remember when the series ended, I said if you had to rate it, it's probably a little bit below average for a series. It has its highlights. They're at number three, The Prisoner for Azkaban.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, it's also the best book. Yeah, that makes sense.
The fourth one was pretty decent as well. What's that one? Triforce
of Courage.
Yeah.
Harry Potter and the Triforce of Courage.
It's the Tri-Wizard Tournament one. That one's pretty good. And I do like that the series as a whole got darker as it went along. That was
Goblet
fun.
Goblet of Fire, by the way, is what
Goblet of Fire. There we go. But overall, I hated. This is my big complaint about Harry Potter. And I only read the first
tale.
Is that the ending, this whole, you know, they had to get all these, what were they called? They had to get like certain items.
The Horcruxes.
Yes, the Horcruxes, whatever they were.
The pieces of his soul because Voldemort was a lich, D&D nerds.
So all of this comes up in like the fifth book or fifth movie or whatever it is. So I wanted them to draw on something that happened in the first two. If you're going to have this humongous series.
Well, they did draw on what happened in the first
enough.
Two.
I mean, not enough.
Tom Riddle's journal was a horcrux. Like, what more can you ask for?
Well, that's one thing. That's one thing. I'm just saying we needed a little bit more, I think, from the first couple of films. I think if you just watched 5, 6, 7, I think there were 8, right? They split the other one
into
2.
Split it
so
into
5, 6, 7, 8, you saw basically the entire story of what they were going for as far as the arc.
The arc
didn't start until the fifth book.
But you didn't get to know the character of Harry Potter.
I mean,
and
enough.
Who's also the least interesting character in those novels, so...
Well, that may be, but that's not the story was great. I mean, it was...
The story was great. For a while, but I think even in the book series, that got away from her. That Harry Potter could have ended much better than it did is a wonderful series.
I agree.
It's something that I'm going to share with my kids, but my kids are also going to be disappointed with it in the same way that I was.
Oh, and same with Narnia.
And those movies, man, like they weren't the same thing. And I felt like people were sort of chasing the dream of the book when they saw those movies again. People want to experience Harry Potter again for the first time. And those movies left me feeling hollow. That said, Alan Rickman, fantastic choice for Snape.
Awesome.
Emma Watson. Hello. The Harry Potter series gave us Emma Watson.
She was great in the first movie.
She was great in all the movies.
No, she was not Hermione. I'm sorry. She was so wonderful in that first movie.
I would actually say
she forgot how to act.
I would actually go to the third one again, Prisoner of Azkaban, for her best when she's got the whatever that's called, where she goes back in time. I loved her character in there.
Yeah.
I love that whole storyline, but that one was great. Good pick though, Matt. I mean, I didn't put Harry Potter on my list for the sole purpose of I knew it would be somebody's number one.
Some idiot would put it on the list.
James, what do you got sitting as your favorite young adult?
The Princess Bride, where it belongs at the top of the list. Let's get into this. Why not? At least closer to the top. I'm interested in this. Because to me, I'll explain why I like it, and then we'll go into why Matt didn't put it at the top.
Well, first of all, it's not young adult fiction.
Okay. Anyway, Princess Bride is
what
a movie.
An ass. I mean,
no,
what an absolute
it's true.
Ass.
Hello?
Unlike the Harry Potter movies, which will get rebooted, you will never be able to remake The Princess Bride.
I agree. If they do, I will seriously be pissed.
Exactly. It's a movie that is immortal. 50 years from now, people are still going to be showing that film to their kids. It is just a wonderful story done in such a great way that everyone, when they see it, loves it. And so many people call it their favorite movie. It's beautiful.
It's up there for me, too.
Yeah, it's clear. Well, it made the list, apparently.
I bring it up on a lot, and honestly, that's probably why it didn't get higher.
Now, oh, okay, that makes
sense. The only reason it's not on my list, unfortunately, I did not see this film until I was much older.
I didn't see it until I was in high school.
So I was like, everybody would talk about this movie, and I was like, I haven't seen it. It wasn't until I was like probably maybe in college or out of college, and I finally watched it. I love the film. I own it now. But for me, I noticed when someone has seen it a little bit younger, they love the film, like you're talking about, James. Where with me, I like the film. I enjoy it. But for me, it doesn't hit like, say, like The Neverending Story, a movie that I had when I was young.
You connected to when you were a little
kid.
Right.
Yes. I'm missing that connection with the film.
Has anybody reassessed The Neverending Story recently?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
We actually interviewed Noah Hathaway, who is Atreyu.
Oh, yeah. What the heck?
Yeah. At C2E2, he was there.
Goodness gracious. Yeah, that movie does not hold up, but man, what a great way to make kids cry.
I think it still holds up. I think it does.
It has one of the most interesting horror concepts that you can show
a
child.
It's really scary.
It's terrifying, but it's not a good movie.
We have one number one left, Best Young Adult Adaptation. You guys missed a big one. It's a classic, and I think there is no better book than
a bunch that I missed on purpose.
A better book to have a 12 through 15 year old read.
Twilight.
And that would be, the movie came out in 1962. Of course, I'm speaking of To Kill a Mockingbird.
I knew somebody would get this.
Yes.
So
I mean,
I'm
this
glad
is
that it was gotten.
A worthy number one. Obviously, the film stars Gregory Peck. And everybody knows this movie. We don't have to dwell into it, but obviously, To Kill a Mockingbird is a great adaptation movie, and it's a great book, and it's a great story, and it's something that I would always share with my kids, and I think everybody should share with their kids.
Yeah, I again, fully agree. To Kill a Mockingbird is, and it's going to be shared with kids, whether they want it to be shared with them or not.
And you talk about a movie that'll never be remade.
No, they're going to remake that. They're going to remake the heck out of that.
Oh, boy.
Darren Aronofsky is going to direct it.
Now, do you guys have any honorable mentions?
Yeah, absolutely. One that I didn't mention because of the format, Persepolis, which is a graphic novel, which is why I didn't do it. But it is young adult. It's about a girl growing up in Iran. It is sad. It is beautiful. It is so many things.
Yeah. She's into Iron Maiden. I love it. Good movie. Matt?
Well, I mean, guys, we got to talk about Hunger Games a little bit. It's the poor man's Harry Potter. So
I was just disappointed. I was disappointed.
The rich man's Divergent.
Yes, there you go.
Ooh, I was disappointed with the first movie, you know. The second one, decent, you know. I thought the second film was decent. I'm still not great.
Compared to the book, I agree that the first one wasn't as good.
You know what happens with these when you get these series like Hunger Games and Divergent, where they already have the in-house
base.
They're almost afraid to take chances at that point. They're more or less going at it with almost like a prevent defense, meaning let's just not screw it up. And that's not the way you should make movies.
That's the way you should make those movies.
That's what they're going at. The Hunger Games is attacking it like, hey, let's get a safe director and let's just not screw it up. And that's all they want to do.
But
they don't want to take any – I'm not saying I want them to take liberties towards the story, but they're not taking any risks that would really enhance it for the film adaptation a lot of times. And unfortunately, it comes off as just sort of wooden on screen. If you've read the book, it comes off like, oh, they got around the table and they said, this is what we need to do. And that's exactly what they did. Like the bare minimum to make sure they didn't screw the movie.
I have to cinema war you at this point, because I think that if you're going to take a beloved piece of media, it should be your only goal not to fuck it up. I feel like producers and directors in Hollywood take liberties and license all the time when making movies, and it ruins them.
I disagree, because the problem is I related it to the prevent defense, like in sports. You go with that I don't want to lose mentality, you end up losing. You're not going for the win. And I think that when you're going to not screw it up, just the start of it at that point is already sort of, you know, a defeat. You know, you're not going to knock it out of the park.
Okay, but can we imagine how interesting and wonderful the Wolverine backstories would have been had they not taken liberties with them? I feel like we might have some decent movies instead of some garbage movies.
I can't say anything about the Wolverine movies.
James wins this cinema war.
Good stuff, good stuff. Well, when we come back from break, though, Matt, we have a
real cinema war.
Looking at Darren Aronofsky, plus yourself versus James in Ashley Judd, Kate Winslet movie trivia.
And you guys wanted to check in on the score there. It is Matt 2, James 2 spiritual victories.
Ooh, nice.
Oh.
Wow, Matt, try to keep perfect.
I'm undefeated against
nice,
somebody.
Nice. We'll be right
and
back.
And so am I, spiritually.
We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw.
I remember the first time I heard Cinema Jaw. Sounded like a stiff wind would blow them over. That was my first impression of the show. Cinema Jaw. The show that crawled through a river of shit and came out clean on the other side.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a CinemaJaw movie fact. The Harry Potter series is the highest grossing film series ever with $7.7 billion in worldwide receipts. Each film is individually among the 50 highest grossing films of all time. And that is your CinemaJaw movie fact.
To get ourselves a treat.
Hey Jawheads, exciting news. C2E2, Chicago's Comic and Entertainment Expo, is coming back to Chicago April 25th through the 27th. There's always big name guests there from the world of entertainment and comics. Plus the best thing, Matt, we're going to be there. We have our own booth, Cinema Jaw, so stop by, say hello.
We'll be there.
Meet Elias, see what the Jaw Box is all about, see how small it really is.
You could even smell it if you dare.
It is taking place at McCormick Place. To find out more information on C2E2, visit their website, c2e2.com. Tickets are on sale now. Enjoy. And we are back on Cinema Jaw, hanging out with James D'Amato of One Shot Podcast. James, thanks again for all your help tonight.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on this show.
And again, for the Jawheads listening to this that want to check out One Shot, where's the best place to do so online?
You just head over to peachesandhotsauce.com and click on the big One Shot button. We do an episode every week. We also do an episode of the companion podcast, Critical Success, nearly every week. And you can check out our great Comic-Con episodes coming up. All of them are comic book themed. All of them are in some weird role-playing system or other. It's a fun time, especially if you like movies, because they're just stories being told.
And Jawheads, for you making the trek to C2E2, James will have a booth pretty close. I'm not sure exactly where because we haven't got our booth numbers yet.
Mine is 5B.
You already got
yours? Oh, hey, the booth numbers are probably released.
Why didn't you find ours, Matt? See, you put Matt in charge of something. We won't get our booth number for 3 weeks now.
I will have our booth number for before the end of this episode.
Maybe we're right next
to
James.
We'll throw that in the Jaw Box.
Yeah. But anyways, Jawheads, definitely check out, obviously, Cinema Jaw's booth and also stop by One Shots. Play
some
role-playing games.
We're going to be giving away free dice, man.
Oh, that's awesome. I know I'll be there. Matt, before we get to trivia and before we get to Cinema War, we did throw one item into the Jaw Box. I'm sure Elias is probably hot as hell down there. So let's open up that Jaw Box.
Whoa!
Oh my
God! Where is he? He's escaped.
Is he in the room?
He's talked about leaving for a long time, Matt, but
I only agreed to be a part of the show because you told me he would be in the box. I did not agree to be on the show if he's in the room.
James, I apologize already. I can't believe it.
He flew
the coop. The guy
what?
Has flew the coop. Boy, oh boy. Sound the alarm some more. I mean, we you know what we need right here is Tommy Lee Jones on call to talk about how far somebody can get by
foot.
Wait.
What's that? Scratching to the side of the box next to all those human fingernails.
Whoa, look at that. Before he left, Elias did answer the question. It's engraved into the Jaw Box. Who was the actor who played... obviously, we need to talk about Kevin, but also appears in Perks of Being a Wallflower. It is Ezra Miller. Jawheads, Ezra Miller is an actor to keep your eyes on. Oh my God, this guy goes from extreme to extreme. Love this guy. Talented, talented young actor.
All right, well, I feel very unsafe.
I know, I do too. Let's close that Jaw Box and let Tommy Lee Jones track down this fugitive. Matt, it brings us to a segment called
Cinema War.
And Cinema War works like this, Jawheads. This is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week. And our guest this week, James D'Amato, gets to play judge, jury, and executioner, and a guy who thinks he knows too much. And tell the Jawheads.
No, I don't think I know too much. I know everything.
And he tells the Jawheads at home who he thinks won this cinema war. And it's important because we are battling for 20 seconds of precious jaw time to rant and rave on whatever we want. Now, as we know and have discussed, Darren Aronofsky is directing Noah. And we thought it would be interesting to have a cinema war looking at, should Aronofsky continue making big blockbuster films? Or should he stick to indie films? Matt, you'll be fighting he should stick to indie films. Rye, myself, am battling that he should continue on doing some blockbusters.
Yes, you am.
Let the cinema war begin.
Ryan, Darren Aronofsky is a genius. I think we can both agree on that. But it won't take long for big Hollywood budgets to ruin yet another great director. Just look at M. Night Shyamalan, or to a much lesser degree, Sam Raimi. Both had amazing indie hits and crappy big budget debacles. Leave that shit to Michael Bay.
Matt, an intelligent indie filmmaker is exactly what the boring, mundane, blockbuster type film is in need of. I don't just want to see things blow up or listen to superheroes rattle off cheesy one-liners. Aronofsky can do what Nolan did with Inception. Make us think.
What do you think of when you hear the name Darren Aronofsky? I think of grit, grime, down and dirty filmmaking, genius level storytelling, and special effects that are tasteful, if not understated. He is a master of the craft. Why would we want him to become another Steven Spielberg, George Lucas type big budget blockbuster guy? Will he elevate big budget films? Sure, because that's just what happened to every other great indie director who entered the Hollywood machine. They made big budget films with the heart of the indies. Oh, wait. This just in. That never happened.
Whoa. Matt, Noah is not Aronofsky's first big budget film. He also directed The Fountain, a film that might not have worked for everyone, but at least it had major ambition. And that's what I want out of these blockbuster films. Don't give me paper boxes that we see every single week come out. I want ambition here, and that's what Aronofsky gives us.
All right, no paper boxes. Why, Rye? Why? You, of all people, should be fighting for him to stay in the art house. What good can possibly come of this? Wolverine, directed by Darren Aronofsky? Oh, wait, that almost happened. Is this what you want? No, you should want more Black Swans and Requiem for Dreams, and so do I.
Hey, I love those films, but you know what else I love? Inception, and I go back to it again. Inception, and even last year's Gravity to a certain point, was the perfect balance of big action mixed with big ideas, and it's something I want to see more of. I long for that. The greatest action sequences you can put on screen, Matt, is nothing without some drama behind it. And if you add in some intelligence, you have movie of the year material. That's what I want out of Aronofsky.
Pi, Requiem for a Dream, The Fountain, The Wrestler, Black Swan, Noah, Transformers 6. Is that how you want Aronofsky's filmography to read? Fine, give him Noah. I'm sure he'll be nominated for Best Picture for it. But for God's sake, and this is me saying this here, no superhero big budget films.
Wow, that is shocking. Matt, we love to see Aronofsky direct his smaller films, as you mentioned, The Wrestler and Black Swan. But why not give him some more money and let him reach a larger audience with an action film? Maybe the masses will be turned on by what they see and seek out smaller films. It's a win-win, not just a Requiem for a Dream.
The masses are asses.
We are button heads on Cinema War, as always. Whew. We throw it to our judge, our jury. James, what did you think of this Cinema War?
This is amazing. This is a really, really close race for me. Actually, this is the most difficult Cinema War that I've ever judged. It's very near and dear to my heart. But I gotta go with Ryan on this.
Oh, you kidding me? You gotta be out of your fucking mind!
Woo! I'm not out of my mind.
What are you smoking?
Here's the thing. Wolverine was garbage.
I was pulling up my freaking, my 20 seconds
wasn't
here.
It? Well, yeah, you were pulling it up. You were so ready to win. Wolverine
That's
was
right.
garbage. It could have been good. There is nothing
Wolverine
about
was
that.
Fine. It was fine. I liked
no,
it.
No, it was not. No, it was not.
So you're giving it to him just because Wolverine was no good?
Absolutely.
What?
Because there's no, like, here's
so
the thing.
It's so stupid.
Here's the thing
it's
about
not.
Hollywood.
It's stupid.
It's not. You're stupid, man.
No, that's stupid.
Hollywood is stupid. Television used to be stupid, but television is in a golden age where we are actually giving money to people who deserve to have that money. For years on NBC, Tina Fey, one of the most brilliant comedic minds of our generation, produced a show that did not pull in the viewers that it needed to pull in, but had an enormous budget. 30 Rock is seminal and beautiful, and that's the sort of thing that I want to see in movies. There are no Stanley Kubricks directing big blockbuster movies that are going to be shown again and again for years to come. We need that. Hollywood needs that, or cinema is dead, and you need to start a new podcast.
That's bullshit. That's bullshit. Because there will always be great indie movies to carry. That's horse poop. Rye's looking for a sound effect over here. Sorry, James, you botched this one. Go ahead, Rye.
I did not. You're wrong.
Thank you, James. It's an honor to win the Cinema War. And I tell you what.
He wasn't expecting to win either.
No, you know what? I was expecting to win because I thought James had sort of what I was going for. Is the idea is this. The guy works his ass off. He makes great films. Why not reward him with making money? I should say giving him money to make even bigger projects. You want to see Michael Bay waste all that money on meaningless action films to get the masses to continue to be asses? And what I'm saying is this. If it's Christopher Nolan, if it's Darren Aronofsky, if they can make a big film with some intelligence behind it,
here's the thing.
It's a win-win for
all
of us.
I'm
going to
blow your mind here. Inception was a passion project. That's something that Nolan used the money from Batman to make.
Exactly.
He made a blockbuster film that was good and challenged people. Why can't we do that all the time?
James was right on my pitch. I mean. And I hope that if Darren is going to keep making big budget films, he's going to do it.
He's going to make Transformers 6, guys.
No, he's not.
And then it will be good. And then Transformers will be good. And the only bad part is you'll have to watch the other Transformers movies to understand what happened.
Using my 20 seconds of jaw time, there was a review I had wrote and I missed when we had a long jaw go long. And it is The Wind Rises. It's the animated film by
Hayao Miyazaki.
Okay, sorry. And I tell you what, it's sort of a biography on his life, and his father's life, how they grew up, pre-World War II, wanting to design airplanes, and, beautiful film. I think we all like, a lot of his, stuff.
Sure.
A lot. Absolutely.
And I tell you what, if this is his last film, it's a masterpiece of a film. I thought when the Academy Awards were announced, it was actually going to beat Frozen because I thought the Academy voters would go that way. It did not happen, but please, jawheads. I know it only opened in a few cities here in the U.S. It played in like one or two cities here, one or two theaters here in Chicago. So definitely when it comes out on DVD, give it a spin. It's well worth it.
Absolutely, yeah. Give his entire filmography a spin.
And I got to catch up with it. I've only seen about maybe five of his films.
Oh, man,
I've seen a few.
Whisper of the Heart, that's my jam.
What about Frozen, James?
That was not my jam. That was a terrible movie.
Come on. Are you serious? Terrible movie?
I judge it so hard. It was lazy.
Lazy?
Yep. It was lazy in its innovation. That's not a phrase you hear very often.
Boy, this James is always, he's got an opinion on everything, I tell you. That's why we love to have him on the jaw. This is why he's
starting to rethink that, man.
I love it. It brings us to trivia. And as I mentioned, Divergent out in theaters in the supporting cast, Ashley Judd and Kate Winslet. We are playing Kate Winslet, Ashley Judd movie trivia. James has not beat Matt yet.
It's not going to happen tonight.
I hope to God it does. James, please, please win tonight.
I'm going to win another spiritual victory.
This would be so fantastic. You are our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals. if the person doesn't know it. And if you get stuck on one, well, because our engineer Elias has escaped from the Jawbox, I will help you out with clues. You get one rescue. Rescue me, Ryan.
Okay. Okay. Give me a minute to get ready here. I'm ready.
Do you want to go first?
Let's do this. I'll go first.
Question number one to you, James. What was the name of Kate Winslet's character in Titanic? First name only is okay.
That would be Rose. Coin on the board.
One to
Look
nothing, James. One to nothing, James. And it was only one question trivia. The game's over! No, I'm kidding. Question two. Ready, Matt?
Jack.
Ashley Judd starred alongside Morgan Freeman in this 1997 Alex Cross movie. Ashley Judd, Morgan Freeman.
I heard it. Along Came a Spider. Damn it.
I'm glad I went
then
first.
You know.
I wouldn't
then
have
you know.
Known that one either.
Then it's,
oh, wait,
it's,
I have to
obvious.
Answer it still.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the other one.
Of course.
James doesn't know the two.
I don't know either of it, but I, you know what? Oh, I do. It's K-Pax. What? What?
Kiss the Girl.
Come on.
It was Kiss the Girls.
Oh,
it is still one to nothing,
so
James.
So close.
Yes. Still
so
one to nothing,
close.
James. Question
okay.
number
It was K-Pax, though.
Question three is over to him. Ashley Judd starred alongside Tommy Lee Jones in this 1999 film in which she is framed for murdering her husband. You do have a lifeline if you need it.
Yeah, I'm going to use that lifeline
Whoa!
Immediately.
Question number three.
Is this my pattern?
Question number three. What is the name of that Ashley Judd, Tommy Lee Jones film? Your clue is this, James. Alex Trebek hosts this show.
Oh, Double Jeopardy. Hey, look at that. That's the first time we've gotten 2 points.
Wow. 2-0, James. He's slaughtering Matt at this point.
I knew that one.
Question number four over to Matt. Kate Winslet starred alongside Johnny Depp in this 2004 film that was about the author of Peter Pan.
Finding Neverland.
I knew that one, too.
He is on the board. It is 2-1. Good ball game here. James has used his lifeline. Question number five is over to him. Kate Winslet has been nominated for 6 Academy Awards, but has only won once. What film did she win it for, James?
I'm going to guess Titanic, but... Nope.
Matt, you got a chance for a steal here and to tie the ball game up.
She's been nominated how many
Six
times?
6 times.
6 times. Wow.
Good
yeah.
Lord.
Wow.
Only won once. What was the name of that film?
The Muppet Movie.
It was Wolf of Wall Street. It was Wolf of Wall Street.
Is that your guess, Matt?
No, I have no idea. Sure. I'm not going to use a lifeline. I'm saving my lifeline.
It was The Reader. The Reader.
Very memorable film.
We just talked about it when we recapped the Oscars 5 years ago.
That's true.
Yeah, we just talked about it 5 years ago.
Oh, man. All right. It is still 2-1, James. And question number 6 now is over to Matt. Ashley Judd appeared in last year's Olympus Has Fallen as the president's wife. What actor played the president in the film?
Aaron Eckhart.
Good choice for a president.
Wow.
Good
wow.
Good choice for
we
a
are
president.
Tied up 2-2. Two
How
questions
about that
left.
Shit? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
2 questions left, and they're the hardest 2 questions. Question 7, James.
And I still have a lifeline.
I know.
You still got the lifeline. That's going to save you.
My guess is knowing you two... going into this trivia, I don't think either one's going to get this without a lifeline. So I hope you do, though, James.
Oh, boy.
Question 7. Kate Winslet starred in 1995's Sense and Sensibility, which is based on a Jane Austen novel. Who directed the film, James?
Okay, this is going to surprise, because a lot of people didn't know this was a directorial debut, actually, and that's Keanu Reeves. It's a fact for you. It's a fact
wow.
for you, jawheads.
Wow.
Don't let anybody tell you any different.
You gotta love it. That was question 7. Over to you, Matt. You do have a chance for a steal. It was not Keanu Reeves. Who directed Sense and Sensibility?
Penny Marshall.
Jawheads.
It was a girl, though, right?
No. Get a load of this. Ang Lee.
Really?
Weird.
Oh, wow.
What? He's directed some weird things.
Yeah. There you go,
right,
guys.
After the Hulk.
There you go. Ang Lee.
He did make a mess of the Hulk.
I like that. See, I like Ang Lee's Hulk.
Well, then you should like indie directors doing big budget movies. Weird. Weird how that works out.
Oh, touche, Matthew. touche. It is tied up 2-2. It's the last question of the game. Matt, you still have your lifeline. Question number 8 over to you. In 2004, Ashley Judd starred in D. Lovely, a biography on the composer Cole Porter. What actor played Cole Porter in the film?
Rescue Me, Ryan.
Wow! Rescue Me, Ryan. Question number 8. And it comes down to this, Matt. Your clue is... Fish Called Wanda actor.
Are we looking for a man or a girl?
Cole Porter was a man, my man.
You don't tell him genders.
I know, that's shouldn't.
Two hints. It's two hints.
Well, he said actor, so I'm just looking for clarification there. Kevin Kline?
Matt continues the streak.
Ah, so close.
We got a handshake going on here, Jawheads. It was more of a fist pump. Matt wins this one 3-2. There was a jawbreaker
in
case.
Yeah, let's see the jawbreaker.
In case it came down to a tie. We would have threw this over to you, James. Better looking actress, Ashley Judd or Kate Winslet?
Good Lord, that's difficult. Nicolas Cage. It was Nicolas Cage.
No, that's actually correct.
It is.
He wins.
3 points.
He would have won that.
Winner. The real jawbreaker was this. Age of director Ang Lee, closest to. Matt, you got a guess?
I would say 55 years old.
We'll lock him in at 55. James, you got a guess?
65.
If my math is right.
I hope it's exactly in between.
No. Actually, Matt wins this one.
What?
He is 59.
He looks old as hell.
I don't think so. Ang Lee, I think, looks pretty good.
Oh, he looks destroyed.
Destroyed.
He's lived a life.
The Hulk, really.
Yeah, the Hulk.
Aged him about 10 years.
Hit him with an aging punch.
It was the gamma bomb of age.
The gamma bomb of age.
Matt, it brings us to the end of a great job. First and foremost, we got to thank our guest hosting us over at One Shot Studios.
Yes.
And also, I mean, just a wonderful guest and host us, and he's going to be at C2E2. James, thanks for coming on.
Hey, guys, thank you so much for having me. Guys, if you want to learn about my podcast without actually listening to an episode, I encourage you, go listen to an episode of the Nerdette Podcast. It's a great show. It's up right now, and I'm very proud of this interview because it's on public radio, and that is a huge deal.
Absolutely.
To me.
We're very excited and happy for you, dude. It's awesome.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me on.
Yeah.
This is always a wonderful show to do.
Awesome. And we also got to thank our sponsors.
Yeah, thanks to Redbox Instance.
And also to the new 400.
They have the best prices on first-run movies in Chicago and a full liquor bar in the theater.
They're located just steps off the Loyola Red Line. Definitely get out there, Jawheads. They play classic movies on Fridays and Saturday nights. You can't beat it.
Now, check out what's playing at thenew400.com, and we thank them for their support.
So until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
And keep on jawing about the movies.
That's it. That's a wrap.
Damn it, James. I wanted you to win.
I was not going to win.
It was not meant to be.